Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I will be starting off the show with an interview with a group from the South Side of Chicago, and the producer and writer for the group, who also will be talking about some other material that he wrote and produced. And the group cut an excellent record, so we'll be talking about their material. And it's also relevant, the song that they cut to the weather today, so so I hope you appreciate the interview. So first of all, would you guys in the studio like to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, my name is Art Williams.
Carl Jones.
Okay, and Carl, you were the lead singer of the group, is that right?
Yes, I was.
So what was the name of the group?
The Stimulators.
And what part of Chicago was your group from?
South Side of Chicago.
And what specific area of the South Side are you from?
Southeast.
Like what blocks?
7500.
That's like a part of every interview. It just came right on schedule. So what block? Like what blocks?
I'll just say between King Drive and Cottage Grove, 7500 South and 7600 South.
Okay.
If you like for me to be more specific, 75th and Eberhard.
Okay. Did that neighborhood have a name back then?
Jesus.
That's
pretty bad. Grand Crossing.
Okay.
The Grand Crossing area.
Okay, yeah. So how did you get started singing?
Oh, we started singing, I've been singing all my life. But as a group, we started singing as dishwashers and a restaurant, Fred Harvey Restaurant. And it was located in the LaSalle Bank Building downtown on Adams. 118 West Adams. All of us guys, we really started singing. We were all dishwashers and busboys, and back in the dish room, we would kind of entertain the customers. You know.
So did you all live in the same area, or you all just knew each other from the restaurant?
Basically, we all lived in the same area.
And you all worked in the same restaurant.
And we worked in the same restaurant.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So you said you've been singing all your life. Had you been singing like in church before that, or in other groups before that?
Yes. As a child, I could sing.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, the greater portion of my family, everybody can sing.
So had anybody else in your family ever, like, sung in a recording group or done any music?
No.
Okay.
Bobby. My older brother is a member of the Stimulators.
Okay. Yes. So you had a brother who was in the group,
right?
Also.
Right.
So what year did this... So you pretty much... you said you've been singing your whole life.
Yeah.
Was it mainly secular music you had been singing?
Yes.
Okay. So what? And you said you were all dishwashers at the same restaurant.
Right.
And so what year were you all dishwashers where you started all singing together?
This is in the 60s. In the 60s, yeah. The latter part of the 60s. Yeah.
Okay. And what year did you guys come together to form a vocal group?
68, 67, 68, something like that.
Okay, so one thing that's interesting about your vocal group is that at least the record you recorded has a almost throwback type sound to the doo-wop era, like there's a prominent bass.
Yes.
And if you heard the record, you'd never guess that it was from the late 60s,
right.
Early 70s.
Right.
So I have to ask you, like, what inspired you to have that kind of sound, and was that the type of sound you were singing when you were singing together as dishwashers?
Well, basically, during the time that we were singing, there were a lot of talent shows going on, you know, and all these different taverns, or what do you call them? And basically, the thing that was going on then, it was like street corner harmony, four-part harmony, and that was the basis of our being a group. Everybody had, you know, we had tenor, bass, first and second tenor, and the blending of harmony is really the creation of the group.
Okay. So were you guys in high school at that time?
Yes.
What high school did you guys go to?
Phillips, Hirsch, I think DuSable.
So you weren't all at the same high school?
We weren't all at the same high school, no.
So who were the members of the Stimulators? And what part did each person sing?
Okay, myself.
And what's your name again?
Carl Jones, and Willie Gant was our bass, and Bobby Grayson was our first tenor. Leon Burns was, what would we call Leon?
Second
tenor. And we had another two second tenors. James Delaney.
Actually, before
James Delaney, Arthur Reed. Arthur Reed was our second tenor. He was a second tenor, but he relocated. He was actually a choir singer himself, though. But he relocated out of state.
Okay. So it was a five-man group?
Five-part harmony.
Were all five of the guys people? Did all five of you work as dishwashers?
Yeah.
So all five of the guys.
We all worked in the same restaurant.
Okay.
All of us. Except for James Delaney.
How did you know him?
Well, I really can't remember how we met James Delaney. Art knows better.
you know, all I remember is, excuse me, I think it was Arthur Reed had left, and James Delaney, I don't know where he came from, it seemed like he just fell out of the sky.
Yeah.
One day he was there. And he really couldn't sing that good, but he could harmonize with them real good. For some reason, he could harmonize with them, but he couldn't sing on his own.
Okay.
He just kind of came in, and he's on the recording session.
Okay.
The second voice you hear after him is James Delaney.
His name sounds familiar, like I've interviewed a lot of groups, and I vaguely remember him being in another group, or do you think he sang with any other groups, maybe?
Not that I know.
But I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay.
Because he was the type of guy that he would get in where he fit in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He would, you know.
So, I guess this is, I could play the record and then we could talk some more, but you ended up cutting a record, and this is where you come in as the producer, which I'll talk about after we play the record, is you, Art, ended up finding the group somehow and producing the record and recording them. Is that right?
Right.
So should I play the record and then we can talk about what happened?
Yeah, let's do it.
So this record, which I think I have the right CD selected. So this record came out, and what year did this record come out? It's called Warm Summer Night?
Yes.
It was either 69 or 70. I'm not quite sure, but I know it was like, I'm going to say 1970 because I just keep remembering 1970.
Okay, so this record, even though if you listen to it, it's got almost a throwback doo-wop sound, and I think what makes it have a throwback back doo-wop sound is, I guess, the prominent bass, because I think by this time, like, bass was, like, less featured in a lot of groups,
yes.
And a lot of groups had, were doing, like, falsetto types of harmony, and
right.
You had more doo-wop type harmony on your sound. And I like to play this song on my show around summer, even though the lyrics of the song are actually about after summer is finished. Yeah. Although now is a good time also, because summer's almost finished also.
Okay. Yeah.
So let's play the song, which is just a great song, and then we can talk some more. So this is the Stimulators with Warm Summer Nights from around 1970.
Now that home. Now that she's gone, all I'm longing for are those warm summer nights. What summer nights we shared.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just the Stimulators with the one record that they released entitled Warm Summer Nights. If you're just tuning in, I have the lead singer of the Stimulators named Carl Jones, who is telling his story, along with the writer and producer of the song named Art Williams, who is also telling the story of the group. So that record came out around 1970. So one thing I didn't ask is, first of all, you guys were all dishwashers at a restaurant. Why didn't you name yourselves after the fact that you were dishwashers?
I know, that would have never worked. But our other name was what, the Lavelles?
The Lavelles, yeah.
And how we went from the Lavelles to the Stimulators, I can't remember. But
I remember.
Yeah.
We were at my house in the kitchen, and I think I made a statement like, the Lavelles, that's a nice name, but we didn't know what it meant.
Okay.
You know, so we were sitting around writing names down on a paper, trying to figure out a new name, and Leon.
Okay.
I just bought toothbrushes for my kids.
And they had
that little rubber tip on the end called a stimulator.
Yeah.
And Leon picked that toothbrush up and he said, stimulator. They were named after the rubber tip on a toothbrush.
That's a dumb deal.
But you know that was
okay.
I think that turned out to be a cool name.
I think that worked out. That worked. It's too bad you didn't have more records out too.
Yeah.
So first of all, can you repeat what was the lineup? Who were the five members on that record again? You sing lead.
Yes.
And then who else sings on that record?
Bobby Grayson sings tenor, first tenor. Leon Burns sings tenor. Willie Gant singing bass. And on the record is James Delaney singing second tenor.
Okay. And I have to ask again, like you gave an answer about how everybody was singing kind of street corner harmony, but I have to ask again, like you really had a throwback kind of sound. Was that the type of sound you guys were actually always singing at the time?
Yes.
So what inspired you to do that throwback sound instead of singing more like of a modern sound at that time?
It was like the going thing at that time.
But I'm just saying, like, that's on the radio, like, yeah. The songs didn't sound like that anymore. You know what I mean? Yeah. In the early 60s, songs might have sounded like that, but in the radio, like, the Temptations didn't sound like that. Temptations were getting funky, you know?
Right.
Like, other groups didn't sound like that anymore. So you had a throwback sound, so it wasn't the going sound at the time.
No, but that was our hook. That was actually our hook, and it was anywhere we sang, it was accepted. So
your hook was to have that sound.
That sound, yes.
So did you guys do shows also?
We entered a lot of talent shows. On one occasion, we won a, not that we went on it, but we won a 14-day road tour from a talent show with Garland Green, but we weren't able to accept that because everybody couldn't make that trip.
So you were still in high school at the time.
Right. And, you know, the crazy thing about it, we were all underage, but we sing in every tavern that we could possibly get in. But we were all big for our age, so we entered talent shows.
Were they mostly like the high school talent shows, like the Harlan?
No. I mean actual taverns. Green Bunny, the Burning Spear. Name some for me.
High Chaparral,
you know, those type of places,
nightclubs. I should say nightclubs, right?
Okay.
But yeah.
So I guess this is where art comes in, is how did you end up finding the group and producing the record?
Actually, I've known Carl Jones long before he started working in that restaurant.
Okay.
And I knew his brother, and I also knew
Willie Gant.
Willie Gant, who we call him Roy. Mm-hmm. He's the bass singer. But anyway, I've always wanted to be a songwriter, but I can't sing, and I can't write music. So what happened, I figured the only way I can demonstrate a song to somebody is have somebody else to sing it, because if I try to sing it, no deal. So I heard these guys singing one night. I was getting ready to go home, and they were standing on the corner singing, and I approached them, and they were receptive, you know, so we started rehearsing at my house, and they had this little song.
Can we back up a little bit, actually? Mm-hmm. You have some background where you're not originally from Chicago also, is that right?
I grew up in Joliet, Illinois.
Okay, and there were some musicians from your neighborhood, too, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Like you were telling me.
Newsom. Frankie Newsom.
Okay, and his original name was Willie
Newsom.
And he came to Chicago and recorded as Willie Parker originally?
Right.
And then as Willie Newsom.
That was
Newsom.
His manager's name, so I think he had to become his legal guardian so he could take him into different venues where he wasn't old enough to go at that time.
Okay.
But I couldn't swear to that, but I think that's what happened.
Okay, so then you came to Chicago and you wanted to be involved with music?
Always.
Yeah. Okay, sorry to interrupt your story. I just wanted to get your background.
No. But I heard these guys singing on the corner, and, you know, I approached them. But
you already knew them, you were saying.
Oh, yeah, I knew. I've known this guy here for a while. He was a shorty, as they call him.
So you and his brother. You lived in the same neighborhood?
Same neighborhood. Yeah, and so they started coming to my house to rehearse. And at first, I didn't bother with, you know, trying to put any songs on them because they were, you know, rehearsing, getting their harmonies down and all that. And then they had this little thing they used to do with the bass singer. And, you know, it's Warm Summer Nights is based on that little, they had a little thing going. And the bass singer is actually the basis of that song, period. Because I used what he did then, and I just dropped the lyrics in there.
So they already had the basis of the song?
The basis of the song, they already had it. It didn't have lyrics. It was just the bass and some harmonies over it. And I just changed it, and I put some lyrics in there, eliminated some of the harmony to give him room to do his lead vocal. And then, you know, so that's how that came about.
So you were kind of like a poet more than a songwriter.
Actually, I always considered myself a songwriter, but when you looked at it, you had to say poet because you couldn't tell it was a song unless somebody sang it.
Okay. So what year did they have any songs before you came to them?
You guys had any songs?
No, we hadn't written it.
How long had you guys been together before Art discovered you?
At least 5 years.
So what types of material did you guys sing together?
We sang everybody's, you know, Temptations.
They love the Temptations.
You know, we sang everybody's music.
Okay, but you probably sing it in your own style, at
right.
least.
Right. We arranged a lot of things just so that the 5-part harmony would be explicit. We changed things that you could absolutely, that you call it that doo-wop sound. We changed things around so it would be just like that.
Okay.
Yeah,
because the Temptations had 5-part harmony too, but you
right.
probably re-emphasized the bass.
Yes.
And,
yes. Okay. Absolutely, yes.
So Art was the first person to give you original material. Is that right?
Yes.
So you said you guys never wrote your own songs.
No.
So how did you end up getting a record deal and taking them to the studio?
Actually, what I did was kind of crazy. A lot of people told me I was crazy. I was working at the time. I had a wife and 3 small kids. And I just saved money. You know, I found out how much it would cost to go to a studio. I found out how much you would have to pay some musicians to back it up. And when I got a hold of enough money, I just went in the studio and recorded it.
So you fully produced it yourself, you're saying?
Yeah. And then the only thing that happened, once I got the tapes, now I got to find somebody with a record label to press it up. And that's when I found...
Sound Horrific.
Yeah.
So the publishing on the record, I think it's like Archie Music. Is that your publishing?
No, that must have been the Soundarific. Something that Soundarific already had set up, because they had a couple of artists that they were working with at the time.
Okay, so you had fully produced it, and do you remember where it was recorded?
Sound Studios.
Where's that?
That was down on...
38.
No, that was down. Remember, that was downtown.
700 South Michigan, North Michigan. It's on Michigan Avenue. I can't remember.
I can't remember exactly, but the name of it was Sound Studios. They did a lot of recording for a lot of stars.
And do you remember who the musicians were that you got together to play on it?
I can only remember one musician, and I'll never forget him. The name of Dave Bacon. He was the lead guitarist.
Okay.
Great guitar player.
But you got like a really nice instrumental track on it, though. But you said that you didn't actually read music. Is that right?
No.
So did you have to pay someone to do the charts and arrange it and stuff?
Actually, I don't think any charts were ever done. No. We were just sitting there working on it.
Yeah.
So at the session, you just told them how to do it, and they just did it?
Actually, what happened was, in the believe it or not, I had this whole band. How many pieces? About seven or eight?
Yeah.
In my kitchen. Yeah. In my kitchen at home, they would play. Dave Bacon was doing an arrangement for the song,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't. I don't know if we didn't have time or money, but I didn't have time to like work on a second song at that time. So what we did, we took the instrumental accompaniment from the song, and we made an instrumental of it on the side B.
Okay.
With Dave Bacon adding some more guitar overdubs and all that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's all. So pretty much they had rehearsed it in your kitchen, the band.
Right, right.
So you got the whole band together. So it's truly you fully produced it. You got the whole band together. You just found some guys. You booked studio time.
You want to know something? Now, here's the weird thing. You know, you hear me talk about James Delaney and we don't know where he came from and all that. He's the one that got the band for me.
Okay. So you pretty much, it was all hustled together by you.
Yeah, right. And I had to pay those guys like, I forget how much it was, like $50, $60 each. So I had to go to my wife and tell her, hey, I got to try to do this. And she went along with me and said, hey, go for it. So.
Okay, so then you produced this record. You went, you recorded it.
Mm-hmm.
You found this label. Who ran the record label, Soundarific?
It was a guy named Robert Lowe. He was a minister, Reverend Lowe.
Okay.
And
so
he was like on 39th in Michigan? 38th in Michigan.
How did you initially try to shop it around to different labels?
Actually, I did. I went to a company called Alden Records. They had it was like a family operation. Johnny Aldo and the relatives, I think they cut a couple of records. I don't think they made, they weren't too big of hits. But I went to him, and he was really interested. And then I ran up on Reverend Lowe, and I decided to go with Reverend Lowe. Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if I went with Alvin. I was Reverend Lowe convinced me that they were going to rip me off if I went over there. They were Italian guys.
Okay.
But now that I think about it, if that record could have gotten the exposure that it deserved, I wouldn't have cared about getting ripped off as long as I could do another one.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
So, he pressed it up. Did it get any play at all?
I don't think we got any airplay. Do you remember any airplay?
No.
I went to the station. It wasn't WVON. It was another station that was like their competition. What was the name of that station?
Was it BEE?
No, it was
GMTV.
No, I can't remember. But anyway, I went down there, and the guy took the record, and we talked. And I'm not going to accuse anybody of anything, but I'm thinking that he was waiting on me to offer him something.
You didn't have the cash flow to get
I didn't get a play.
Okay.
I think if I'd had some money left over, I think I could have gotten some airplay.
Okay. And so pretty much, what happened? So the record was dead in the water at that point.
Practically dead. You know, the best thing that happened that I know about is we got people that we knew that spent. You know, there was record spinners in clubs and stuff. They would play it. I think my brother-in-law played a lot on the West Side. Mm-hmm. You know, he used to use it in a contest. He would put it on, and anybody that can guess the name of this record in the group, they would win $25. Naturally, nobody ever won because nobody had ever heard of us.
All right.
But, unwinnable contest. So how long did the stimulator stay together after that?
It wasn't very long.
I'm going to stretch it and say a year. It might not have been that long, but I'll say a year.
Related to that is you produced a few more records. You produced a record by a group called Len and the PAs. So who were Len and the PAs?
Len and the PAs, there were some guys that lived right down the street from him.
Yeah. Okay.
Len Wood, his brother Ronnie. The drummer was Alan Canty.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Len played the rhythm guitar, so mm-hmm. that took up one of the instrumentals. Then we had, I forget the guy that played the congas. His name was Levi. But we used to, the reason that I kind of hooked up with Len and the PAs mm-hmm. is because in order to do live shows, you need a band. And so that was for the stimulators, you know, background band.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. whenever they did a show, they would have their music mm-hmm. well rehearsed. You know, instead of just playing with a house band that had never seen them before, you know. So that was the reason for that. But the stimulators are, for whatever reason, they kind of disbanded. And so I was still with Len and the PAs, so we started trying to do some things with them.
So you initially hooked up with Len and the PAs to try to get a backing band for the stimulators.
Right.
And you knew Len and the PAs because they lived around the same block.
Down the street.
So you didn't know Len and the PAs before the record came out, otherwise you could have used them as the band for the record, right?
Right. I never met them before that.
So did you, Carl, are you the one that introduced them to Art?
Well, Len's a neighborhood guy, and actually in our neighborhood, we used to have like they still have now, block club parties. And we used to sing in our block club parties, and Len Wood and his brother, Ronnie, and all the guys that were with him, they would participate in that too. So it was like a family deal, neighborhood family deal. And that's how he got to know who Len Woods was.
Okay. And so I guess Len Woods had already cut a record before you met him, right?
When I met him, he played a record for me that he had done.
And he'd done it with Clarence Johnson, actually.
Right, the same guy that had the Emotions.
And he had the Love Lights.
Okay.
He had the Love Lights.
He also had
And the Brighter Side of Darkness.
Yeah.
But the Love Lights sing on Len Wood's record. It's called Do It Funky and I'm in Love.
Yeah, I remember him playing that for me. The first day I met him, we were sitting down talking about the stimulators, and then he went in the back and came back and put this record on that he had done.
Okay. And So you had initially gotten them as a backing band for the Stimulators. So did the Stimulators do a bunch of shows with Len and the PAs?
We did a few shows with them. I mean, they were good, too.
Okay.
Because what made it so good, before the Stimulators would come out, Len and the PAs would put on a show of their own, because Len was a great singer.
Mm-hmm.
And they would put on a show of their own. And then the Stimulators would come out and do their thing, and then Len and the PAs would close it out.
Okay.
It was good.
And the PAs stands for, it says on the record, stands for Public Assistance.
Public Assistance, that's what it stands for, yeah.
Yeah. How do you come, do you know how it came
You know what, I didn't question it too much, as long as they played. That's what it was for.
Okay, so how did you end up deciding to come up with, to cut a record on that?
I mean, I was, you know, like after they kind of disbanded, I was still interested in trying to do, you know, my songwriting, producing things. So, and you know, and they were still playing, so I'd go over there every week in the basement. Then we just started, you know, they had written a couple of songs, Soul Block and Believe Me. And I wrote two more songs for them, and we recorded all four of them. But I decided not to be greedy, and I put both their songs on the first record that we cut, that we pressed up.
Okay, well, before we get into that, let me ask just, after the Stimulators disbanded, did any of the Stimulators go on to do any music? Like, did any of them sing with any other groups?
No.
Okay, so pretty much you all focused on your careers after that. And and none of you are doing music now, pretty much.
No.
Are all the members still alive now?
Yes, as far as I know, yeah.
Okay, well, that's always a positive
sign. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, either way, you cut a great record, so you know that can never be erased from history.
I'm glad I'm glad somebody finally told me that.
You know, people like, and one thing that's great about the Stimulators record is that it's people in both the kind of doo-wop and soul communities. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it because it's got the kind of doo-wop throwback sound and the soul sound. So you kind of cross over between like two different communities of collectors like it, not just sort of one small group of people. And it's even been bootlegged by people. Like, you know, a record is good when people are bootlegging it.
Okay.
So getting back to Len and the PAs, you said you went and you recorded four songs on them.
Four, yeah.
And they had written two songs, and you wrote two songs.
Right.
And you ended up releasing...
The two songs that they wrote, that's what's on that record there.
And the two songs were called Soul Block and Believe Me.
Right.
And Soul Block is a James Brown-type song, right. And Believe Me is like a nice ballad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So let me play the record, and we can talk a little bit more.
Okay.
So this is... Len and the PAs with Soul Block.
Hey, Brother Mike, what's happening tonight?
Well, Brother Len, whatever it is, it's right around the corner.
Hey, Judy, Judy. She's a tutti frutti. She's gonna plant some heavy bones. She's got the soul stack. One guy I know who had danced with her. Now he's suffering from a broken back. He's gonna strike this place, spin wing, and cross the floor. Everybody, top the spot now, and watch him get up and go. Soul Block of blocking people. If you're quitting a run, come right now. You might hear me, people. Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just a really nice James Brown-style funk record by Len and the PAs. That track was called Soul Block. And if you're just tuning in, I have the producer and writer of that record, Art Williams, talking about the production. So do you remember what year that came out?
Uh-oh, that had to be... It had to be like 70, early 72.
Okay.
It might have been 71, but I'm thinking 72, because there was a little space in between the Warm Summer Nights and that particular record.
And that came out on Rush Records.
Rush. Yeah.
Do you remember?
Rush. Go ahead.
What was his name?
Henry Rush.
How'd you get hooked up with him?
Mr. Rush used to, he used to have a TV show with talent from people that worked in the post office. Mm. And he'd have people come out. And I just got in touch with him. I'm trying to remember how, but. Oh, I know how. Remember, he had a restaurant up on 70, on like 80th and Halstead. He had a White Castle type restaurant.
Like a hamburger?
Yeah, like White Castle. You know, it wasn't White Castle, but it was.
But it wasn't a chain. It was a local.
No, just him. And I found out he had a record label, so I went and talked with him, asked him if I could use his label, and he said, sure.
So he just. But you had fully produced the record yourself.
It was already ready to go. It was already done.
And he just custom pressed it for you.
Actually, he just gave me the address of the company that pressed them for me and told me to tell the guy that, you know, it was okay to do the labels and all that. Actually, he really didn't have anything to do with it. He just gave me permission to use his label.
Well, at that point, why didn't you just start your own label?
There was a lot of things I didn't know then.
Okay.
You know, there was a lot of stuff I didn't know.
You already were like 90% there with the production.
I wish I had known I was that close.
So that record got released, and did it get any play?
About the same as Warm Summer Nights, you know.
Same situation.
I would take it to different places, but I forgot to take my wallet.
Okay. Okay, and the flip was a nice ballad called Believe Me.
And just to correct something, Len and his lead guitar player wrote these two songs. I just did the production on them. The two songs I recorded for them, we never pressed up.
And at the beginning of the song, he says, Brother Mike. Who's Brother Mike?
Mike is the lead guitar player. His name was Mike Waltonell.
Okay, yeah, and I could see his name on the writing credits on the record.
Yeah.
So, and then there were two more songs that you wrote, but they were just never released.
We never pressed them up.
But you did record them.
They're recorded, yeah.
What style, did they sound like those two songs that were released?
One was kind of up-tempo, really fast. It was kind of nice. And then the other one was, I was digging deep for something, you know, like a little bit different. You know, because at that point we didn't want to be just like everybody else that came along. So I tried to really write some deep lyrics and give it some feeling. It was a song entitled "Now That I'm Ready," but I wish you could hear it because I'm not going to try to sing it.
Okay. Okay. So it's like it's a ballad though.
It's really slow and I wouldn't call it a ballad.
Okay.
It's almost like a.
It's kind of deep,
dark,
kind of like a deep soul record.
Like, yeah. When you listen to it, it sounds like this guy needs to be in rehab. But it was a nice song.
Okay.
I mean, it sounded like he really needed help, but it was really nice though.
Okay.
And I was I got some influences from the Beatles and all that. You know, they used to write this heavy stuff. I was trying some of that.
Was it kind of psychedelic?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't really psychedelic, no.
Okay, but it's just kind of deep sounding.
Kind of deep and dark, yeah.
Okay, so how long did you have Len and the PAs together?
We worked together maybe a year and a half, 2 years.
Okay, and they were playing clubs and stuff?
They played clubs, I guess, without me, and they played some, you know, they had some dates with me.
Okay, and do you know if they stayed, were you their manager?
Actually, no. I think Len's father was the manager. Len's father was the manager.
And do you know how long did they stay together after you?
After I left, well, not after I left. I think they kind of broke up a little bit before I left.
Okay.
I think the breaking up was what told me it was time for me to go.
Okay. Yeah, and I know somebody who has an LP
by just Len as Lenny Woods, and it was released in the late 70s on some label. He was showing it to me, but so I know that he recorded later, but I don't have it here, so I don't know the details.
I really wish I could hear that.
I'll try to get it recorded for you.
I've been trying to find Len Woods for years. I just never, you know.
I'll try to find him for you.
Hey, I'd love to see that guy again. You know, that's another guy. I'm surprised that he didn't become a star because he had the pipes.
Yeah, he's got that sharp high voice.
Plus, he could play the guitar.
Yeah, and then there was one more record that you also produced for Rush Records, which. By the way, Rush Records, they mainly released gospel, but one big act that they released was Little Ben and the Cheers.
Right.
And you were telling me some story about Little Ben and the Cheers before.
Actually, somebody connected with Little Ben and the Cheers. They're the guys that did I'm Not Ready to Settle Down, right?
Yes.
And what they approached, they didn't really like approach, but I heard that they were interested in having the Cheers record Warm Summer Nights.
But it just never happened.
They just never, like, got back to me. I don't know what happened, but I was informed that they wanted to do it.
That would have been fantastic if they had done that song.
Yeah, I mean, because that was a few years afterwards. And I wouldn't have minded getting it back out there some kind of way.
Yeah, that's too bad that never happened. Did anyone else ever express interest in recording it, the song?
You know what happened? When I first did that, and I was like trying to shop that around, I went to Purvis Staples. He was one of the Staples singers. Mm-hmm. He had a production company, and I went over there and I let him hear the record, and I was trying to sell the group, but he was kind of interested in the song because he had a lot of groups that he was handling then, so he was just kind of interested in the song. And I never told anybody this, but he offered to buy the song from me. But I couldn't see it.
Okay.
I mean, I would have hated to sold him the song for a set amount, and then he'd take it and make $1 million off it. I would have, so I'd rather just keep it.
Okay.
But he expressed an interest. You know, he didn't send his lawyer to see me or nothing. Like, he just expressed an interest in the song.
But it's a really nice song, so... Yeah. It's too bad it didn't get out there more.
Yeah, well,
and then, so one other record that you produced.
Actually, I just wrote, you're talking about the gospel?
Yeah.
I just wrote the song.
Okay, so you wrote a song by the CNH Community Singers.
Right.
And it was called...
He Came Along.
And that came out on Rush also.
Mm-hmm.
So who produced the record?
I think Mr. Rush did.
Okay.
I think he was.
So you just wrote it.
I remember him being in the recording studio when we were there.
So did you write a lot? Did he just ask you to write the song?
No, actually, he didn't ask me to write it. After the choir, my wife was in that choir. That was my interest. So after the, you know, I would go to their rehearsal, and the choir director, we got together, and we kind of worked on this song. And Rush heard this. I don't know how he heard about the choir, because they were really good, and I don't, you know, and he decided he wanted to record them, and that was a song that they wanted to do, you know, that particular song was a song that they wanted to do.
And where was the CNH Community Singers, the choir, based out of?
Chicago, Southside.
Like, were they based out of a particular church?
They had a church. The church was called Community Faith Baptist Church, and it was located in several different places, but they finally ended up on like 62nd and Woodlawn.
Okay.
There's a big church over there. They used to be in there.
They're not there anymore. The huge church that's there now?
The church is there now, yeah.
Okay.
They used to be in that church, yeah.
Okay. So, have you written since you're talking about your whole career, you've wanted to sort of write and produce material. Have you written much more material that has not been recorded?
I've written a lot of stuff that nobody's ever seen.
And have you ever produced any more material that was never released?
That was it. That was
so pretty much the only material you've actually produced that was never released were the two unreleased Len and the PA's records. Is that right?
Oh, the second ones that we never really put on the label.
Yeah.
Right.
But you haven't recorded anything on anyone else?
No.
Okay. Well, hopefully we could get those tapes transferred, and then maybe we could at least hear them. Something will happen with them, maybe.
Okay, that would be good.
But I got to say, thanks so much, both of you, for coming and telling your stories. The stuff you did release was great, so it's too bad that more of the stuff didn't come out. But you did release some great material that will never be erased from history. And you got your story out, so.
Oh,
all right.
So do you have any last words for the listening audience?
I'm just glad that somebody thought it was worth talking about, because I'd forgotten about it. I never forget about it, but like in the back of my mind, I figured, hey, who wants to hear that?
Okay, well, thanks so much, Carl, for coming down.
Quite well. Yeah.
And Tony has a question.
No, I wanted to hear it. I mean, he said, "Who wanted to hear the record?"
Okay, well, Tony, who's over here, is just saying that he's a fan of your record also. So
okay.
There's a lot of fans of the Stimulators record. It's a fantastic record.
You know, they're the thing about the appearance of being rejected. You know what I'm saying? Because, that record got around enough for somebody to say, "Hey, I like that." But, it just never happened, and I figured... Matter of fact, I almost quit after that because I thought it was worth listening to.
Well, there's a difference between like radio play back in the day and then collectors digging up records later. They kind of find these lost things,
but they appreciate
quality.
I'll tell you something. I would have loved to have made the money, but I get more gratification that people are collecting stuff and they think it's worth collecting. I really like that. It makes me feel good.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, you guys did something great, so I appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you.
So this last record that I'm going to play is the flip side of the Lennon and the PA's record. This is the ballad side. This track is called "Believe Me."